This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Anne Marlowe, a visiting fellow at the Hudson Institute here in Washington. Six times she's been embedded with U.S. forces in Afghanistan, and in total, 14 trips to the war theater there in Afghanistan. Our conversation comes, of course, against news that 18 people have been killed, including five U.S. servicemen, on an attack on a Western convoy in the Afghan capital of Kabul. It dovetails into the conversation that we wanted to have today anyway, in which Anne talks about how the U.S. is actually bankrolling someone responsible for providing the materials necessary for some of these improvised explosive devices. And Anne, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, the figure here has a very famous last name. It's Karzai. It's not the president, but it is his brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai. Explain how he has become not only a member of the payroll of the U.S. government, but is also either directly or indirectly helping the insurgents.
Well, he owns a company in Kandahar City, where he is also the elected head of the provincial council. And this company is called Kandahar Crush. It's a gravel and construction materials company on the face of it. And it has the legal right to sell ammonium nitrate. Now, ammonium nitrate is a chemical that has legal uses as a fertilizer and also as a component in the explosives needed for construction. You know, when you build a road or have to blow up a large rock mass, you use a chemical mix called homemade explosives, which is about 50-50 diesel fuel and ammonium nitrate. Because it's so easy to make and it's used in 80-90% of the roadside bombs that kill our soldiers in Afghanistan, President Karzai was finally forced to ban it under heavy pressure from General Stanley McChrystal in very late January of this year. It's become very hard to get for anyone who is a legal actor. In fact, a fellow named Robert Helmerich with USAID in Kabul told me a couple of weeks ago that USAID has been having trouble securing ammonium nitrate for its own road-building projects. However, this chemical is very easily available to the bad guys, to the insurgents who are using it in homemade explosives. And in late April, Lieutenant Colonel David Oaklander, who's the maneuver commander of Zabul province, which sits just above Kandahar province, apprehended an IED-making cell, caught in the act. And they gave up their supplier, who turned out to be a local company supplying the construction trade. When questioned by Americans, they said they bought their ammonium nitrate and their fuses for the IEDs, from Kandahar Crush, the company in Kandahar owned by Ahmed Wali Karzai, Hamid Karzai's brother. And to me, this raises a larger question even than the issue of why we are bankrolling someone who is killing our young men. The larger question is whether the Afghan state itself exists now mainly as a way of furthering a extremely lucrative criminal enterprise that benefits the Karzai family. I don't think we're any longer in a situation where Ahmed Wali Karzai is trying to support Hamid Karzai. I think we're in a situation where Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, is trying to support his brother, who is essentially the mafia boss of Afghanistan.
And you say in your piece here, Anne, that you believe if we're going to make any permanent progress there, then the Karzais have to leave altogether. Given what just happened with the elections not all that long ago, how is that feasible?
I think it's feasible at this point only if we establish a legal mechanism for removing them, a constitutional convention, which has been suggested by the International Crisis Group in Afghanistan, a special emergency lawyer, Jirga. We've reached a point, as documented in the Pentagon's own April 26th report on the state of security in Afghanistan, where I think only 5 out of 80 key districts support the government, and only 24% of Afghans in the south and east support the government. This is terribly small numbers. And what's worrisome is that most of the other, 60, 70, 80%, depending on where you go, are pretty much actively involved in the insurgency, either directly through relatives, through providing of food or supplies to the insurgents, and so on. We're not going to be able to win this war with a population that doesn't support the government. And since we can't change the population, we've got to change the government.
Even if the Karzais get shut down, would that put an end to the practice of getting these materials to terrorists for the creation of IEDs? Are there other providers out there that could fill their void?
Well, there probably are if we let them. But the fact that USAID is having difficulty securing these materials, it shows me that it's possible to shut down at least some of the supply. Obviously, it's possible that there is amounts stockpiled in the country at this point, and it will take a while to work through those. It's not as if it's that difficult to conceal. American troops do seize it when they find it, and they do find it. But interestingly enough, in Zabul, they have not been finding it, and that made them think that possibly it was being laundered in a legal fashion. In other words, there was no need to hide a ton of this stuff in some farmhouse somewhere because a perfectly legal construction company had it in its warehouse. So I think law enforcement is the key here. We've been doing our part, except we've been letting the biggest kingpin of all get away with murder.
Just a couple of minutes left before we have to let you go here. And as I mentioned, you've been embedded 6 times now with the troops. In addition to this ongoing concern regarding IEDs and the Karzai brothers and laundering through illegal loopholes, what else jumped out at you on your most recent visit to our troops in Afghanistan?
Very dismaying situation with regards to the Afghan National Army and police. I've been following that for 2 years pretty thoroughly. Basically, the Americans who are training the Afghan police have almost given up on what are called the Afghan National or Uniform Police. Massive efforts entailing the expenditure of billions of U.S. tax dollars have produced failure. The force is really very little further along than it was 2 years ago when we began. They are more or less jettisoning that effort and instead focusing on a smaller elite group called the ANCOPS, or the Afghan National Civil Order Police. The only problem is the attrition rate for that group is well over 70%. The attrition rate for the police is sky high in any place where they actually need police, like Zabul province, where I was on my second embed. The officer in charge of recruitment told me, quote, every month 100 men are coming and 100 men are leaving. They have a massive turnover rate. It's very hard to accomplish anything with that kind of turnover rate. That's the very unfortunate news from the police. Congress has just appropriated another $11.6 billion for the next fiscal year beginning 2011, which is up from 2010.
Well, and certainly significant challenges facing the United States and our allies there. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anne Marlow, visiting fellow at the Hudson Institute here in Washington, just returned from her 6th embed with U.S. troops in Afghanistan. She's visited the war zone 14 different times. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.